when you lose your footy manager and a player who is indicating that he wants to stay and then talks about going to Richmond and then ends up at Collingwood with your footy manager, that just, it was an unusual set of circumstances.
You know where you stand with Dave Matthews, CEO of GWS Giants. His preparedness to call everything as he sees it is a good, refreshing quality and one that can create the occasional stoush. As you're about to hear, he's happy to call out a big-name player as well as a couple of even bigger-name officials. Our next guest on In The Game is the inaugural and still the only Chief Executive Officer of the GWS Giants, Dave Matthews. Appreciate your time.
Thanks, Damien.
You say the inaugural and you say the only. It's been a while now, hasn't it? 2011 when you took the role and the club obviously jumped into the competition the year after.
Yeah, that's right. It was Melbourne Cup Day 2011 when I started. And look, I always still consider Dale Holmes as the inaugural CEO. He was on the AFL executive at the time when he launched the idea for the Giants and Team GWS as it was then, and he did a wonderful job. And then just on the eve of the first season, there was a change, and Andrew and Tony Shepherd asked me to go in for a few months.
It's been a journey, obviously, and there's been some scepticism attached to the whole project, and I put my hand up with that as highly as anyone would at the time. But I think it's fair to say that in that relatively short time frame, it's become an established part of the competition, and as far as anyone can tell, insofar as predicting the future, it is here to stay, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely here to stay. And I think I understand the scepticism because, you know, we're a start-up club, we're a start-up organisation, quite apart from being an AFL club. And when you're going into the most competitive sporting landscape in Australia, if not the world, and you know, as Kevin Sheedy used to put it, a game that's over 150 years old, but hadn't made any inroads in Western Sydney in particular, and really only the Swans had been there 30 years when the Giants started. So I've never really concerned myself with being criticised. I think you'd concern yourself with being vindicated, and I think the AFL's been vindicated with their investment so far.
Yeah, you obviously have visions for it, and you've already enacted some of those visions. Is there something that you feel is about to happen that we're not aware of, and in terms of shoring this place up and making it even more, I suppose, substantially involved in the region in which it's based and also the AFL?
Yeah, look, I think our aspiration right now would be to continue to build our crowds and build our fan base. And yeah, when you're only 8 years old, it stands to reason that you start with no fans. You know, you start with no colours, you start with no history. You know, I'd love to see for our playing group in particular, you know, that the crowds grow significantly in the years to come. And I think our success and the growth in the club generally will hopefully also mean that we get, you know, more Thursday night games, more Friday night games, become more of a prime time club.
Can you do that? Can you do that without great stress?
Look, it's an area that is a major focus because, as I said, when you're starting out, you know, you're not only trying to attract people to the sport, you then got to attract them to your club, and that's really what's happening in Western Sydney at the moment. But, you know, I think the trajectory that the club's on in every sense is going very well. We're, you know, probably fifth or sixth in the competition already for a commercial revenue, for commercial sponsorship. So that tells you that corporate Australia and, you know, global companies, in fact, want to connect with Western Sydney and with Canberra. And you've got some of the bigger companies in the world in you know, Virgin, Toyo Tyres, Kia. We've got some blue chip supporters, Lendlease. So they've all come on board and been very, very loyal to, you know, the opportunity that we're trying to create. And what we want to do, as I said, is we'll tick over in the next couple of weeks 30,000 members. That's a significant number, particularly in Sydney. And it probably puts us second or third, you know, behind the Swans and one or two of the major NRL clubs. But all that growth is great evidence that we're on the right path. But, we're averaging crowds of 12,000, and you'd like to see that get to 15, 18 in the years to come.
Sure, sure. You're a combative figure, Dave, and I say that as a compliment because you've said before you're not worried about criticism, and I reckon that's true, and I reckon you're very passionate about what you do. Yeah. And how are you wired, if I could just ask you to describe your own mechanisms, because it's a tough job that you took on, and you've certainly been battered at times, but you've always stood up and been there.
Well, look, I think, I don't concern myself with being criticised, but that doesn't mean you don't listen to it.
Yep.
And it doesn't mean you don't respond to it. And there's been criticisms of things we've done that are absolutely on the money. I mean, when you're in a startup business, you've got to be prepared to try things, and sometimes those things don't work. But I think we've got a lot right. We've got more right than we've got wrong. And, you know, the thing that's always made me bristle more than most things is just, I guess, the southern agenda that a lot of media have. And you understand that the constituency that they're talking to is, you know, a Melbourne listening audience or Melbourne fans. And I think the expansion of two new clubs in Queensland and New South Wales is just fundamentally important if you want to lay claim to being the Australian game. You can't actually say you're the national sport unless you have that sort of national presence. So how am I wired? I'm probably wired as a little bit like a Kevin Sheedy in the sense that, you know, I think we've got the best game in the world.
Your heart's on the sleeve though, isn't it?
Yeah, I just don't think we've told enough people about it. And it's where I find criticism of us trying to grow the game. That's the sort of stuff I sort of rail against more than just, you know, criticism of individual decisions about how a club's put together. I mean, the overall aspiration to actually put a second club in Sydney and have a meaningful relationship with Canberra, it's undeniable from my point of view. So, I am very passionate. I think my old role on the AFL executive, and I actually caught up with Andrew Dimitriou for lunch yesterday and was sort of reminiscing about some of the things that we did in that particular portfolio as well. I can remember Colin Carter, when he retired from the commission, saying that in his view, almost all of the significant decisions that were made in his time on the commission were heavily criticised, but ultimately were proven to be, you know, significant advances for the game. And, I mean, there's no better example of that than just going from the VFL to the AFL.
Yeah.
But, short answer, I'm very passionate about what I do.
Yeah. Paul Roos had an ongoing stoush with your good self. He's not one to take on normally, is he? How did that go on go?
Well, I think it started with Andrew Dimitriou being critical of the style of play in that year in 2005 when they won the flag. So, you know, I blame Andrew for the fact that he then...
That was his fight, was it?
Well, I think Paul then probably tarred us all with the same brush that, you know, head office is against me, therefore anyone from head office is someone that I'm going to, have a debate with. I think then when... So you sort of become a bit of public enemy, number one, because you're at the AFL in those circumstances. But then when I moved into the Giants, there's no doubt that some of the key leaders at the Swans didn't want the Giants to come in.
Yep.
They thought it was too early.
It was their patch.
Yep. And I think there was a lot of, sort of in the early days, the relationship was quite counterproductive, I reckon.
Yeah.
There was an idea that, the two clubs could really collaborate hard off field and work together. And maybe that was sort of naive in the initial stages, but it didn't really occur. I think it's occurred a lot more in recent years. But, you know, I can remember there's a famous lunch that I convened when I was still at the AFL, and we decided to get the chairman, the CEO, the coach of both the clubs in a room. We had Mike Fitzpatrick, Dimitriou, Gil McLaughlin, Andrew Catterall, and then we had Tony Shepherd, Dale Holmes, Kevin Sheedy. And we had, I think it was at the time, it would have been Richard Collis.
Andrew Ireland.
And I think it was John Longmire was just coming in. And I remember Sheedy's view at the time was, let's agree on what we're going to fight about. Right? Let's actually create a public agenda and let's get this rivalry going. And I can distinctly remember, Richard Collis's reaction at the time was, no, I'm not playing games with you here, Kevin. This rivalry is going to take a long, long time to develop. Good luck. And it was sort of, the gloves were off a little bit early on, I reckon.
Right.
And then I think, I think Paul has continued to sort of critique us from the point of view of giving an impression that we're being given everything. And, you know, I keep hearing about concessions when they're really just list establishment rules. You've got to get your players from somewhere. And I think it was from that basis that, there was a sort of constant references to I guess, negative references to how we're probably tracking along. He and I have had a couple of conversations since in recent years. I mean,
he described you as an immature 12-year-old at one stage. What was that about?
Yeah, well, Mum probably did that too, but that was probably when you were 12. Yeah. I don't know. I think when you're an administrator in the game, it's pretty hard to take on sort of icons of the game or legends of the game, and that's the sort of public discourse I found myself in a little bit. I got enormous respect for him. I mean, the fact is, I really do respect what the Swans have been able to achieve. It is a difficult market. Their ability to defy gravity, the culture that they've created, and it's largely been driven by Ruse and others, is something that we admire. But from time to time, if you're going to get criticised, I mean, you do find yourself, I think, a little bit, maybe I've gone over the top on this occasionally, with a bit of a siege mentality that everybody's coming at you.
But you've got to fight back, don't you?
Well, you do.
You can't just cop it. You can cop it once, twice, three times, but you've got to come back at some stage. Otherwise, you're going to cop it for the rest of the time.
Yeah, and I think that's leadership as well, Damon, that your staff and your players and your sponsors and fans actually want to see you standing up from time to time
for something
on issues. And, I'm probably getting better at picking and choosing rather than just weighing in on everything. But we're pleased where we've got to at the moment. I think we've now got a really healthy rivalry with the Swans, and we collaborate pretty well. And it probably really kicked into gear properly when Franklin chose the Swans and went there. And that's really, in years to come, we'll look back and go, what was the real seed of the rivalry? It was probably that.
Was it?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. They were tumultuous times, weren't they? We might touch on those times in a few moments down the track in this chat. The realisation or the understanding of what the non-Victorian clubs go to, particularly the expansion parts of that non-Victorian component, there's no realisation or understanding, is there really, when it's all said and done?
No, I don't think so. That from time to time, you've got to – we obviously live it day in, day out. And the early years were difficult. I mean, you look at it and probably in hindsight, the biggest mistake we made at the AFL, and I say we because I was there at the time, is setting these two clubs up without adequate training facilities. Mm-hmm. So, that in itself was something when I look back at, you're drafting Stephen Canelio and these guys at 18 and they're turning up and
baseball fields, weren't they, initially?
Yeah. I think the first time the AFL Commission visited the club, our players were training on a baseball diamond. And, you think about, the geography's new and difficult. It's a competitive sporting landscape. The facilities are, at the time, the worst in the competition by virtue of the fact they didn't exist. The stadium we're in now, Giants Stadium, wasn't quite complete in time for, their first home game. So there's a lot of things early on that have been difficult. And it's like anything in life. You don't really understand what it's like to walk in someone's shoes.
Yep.
And that's why I've got huge admiration for people like Stephen Keneally and Toby Green and others who've shown an enormous amount of resilience. A lot of that resilience in the early days came from Sheedy. I think that was one of the best decisions we made early on, to put somebody in who... he's an expansionist, he's incredibly positive, and he set the tone for a very resilient culture. I over the course of our 8 years, you listen to people talk about or diminish your crowds or where we're up to as a club, and it's easy to do, but it's a failure to recognise that we're a startup.
Yeah. Do you get enough support from headquarters?
Yeah, I think so. Absolutely no doubt that, if you go from a very macro level, a decision in the first place has been vindicated. It's often talked about the sort of size of the distribution that the Gold Coast and the Giants get, but the reality is the AFL's already getting that money back by virtue of creating a ninth game for the broadcast rights.
So it's funding itself in the way you look at it. Yeah.
Yep. The support is strong. I mean, it's... this is an AFL-led initiative to start these two new clubs. So the support had to be there from the AFL because no one else was going to start these clubs. The AFL had to do it themselves. And from time to time, we have debates or arguments with the AFL about differences of opinion on various things. But by and large, the AFL Commission's been incredibly supportive. You know, Demetrio was fantastic. Gil's, you know, great to work with on this stuff as well.
You mentioned Stephen Canilio there, and I was actually going to not mention him, but seeing you have, I may as well. And as we talk, and this this may well go to air at a time when it's been resolved. But quickly, is there an update on him?
Oh, look, I expect he'll stay at the club.
Yep.
But you know, as Leon Cameron said, we in a press conference in recent days, we do need to just finalise things with him. And there's been no particular pressure or timeline applied from our point of view. This is an outstanding young person, not just a great player, but an outstanding young person who I think is entitled to take the time he wants to consider what might be the biggest football decision in terms of if he goes long with us, then he probably becomes a one-club player, and that's a significant decision for him to make. So,
do you get nervous when it drags on? Because you mentioned Leon Cameron there. He did say the same things before round one that he thought he'd signed before the season started.
Until an outcome's absolutely assured, you have to admit there's some aspects of anxiety about it. But, you know, it hasn't proven a distraction for him. He's playing very, very good football, and hopefully he gets recognised in All Australian selection later in the year. But I expect him to stay. He's very proud of what he's built. He's been there from day one. He's been one of the key drivers of the culture.
Will he be captain if he stays?
I think so.
Yeah. Was he close to being captain this year?
No, but I don't think, in saying that people talk about him as a future captain of the club, you know, it's worth emphasising that at no point has that been any sort of aspect of the negotiation.
Okay.
That's not the case. But we do have good depth of leadership there at the moment in Phil Davis, Callan Ward, Stephen Canelio, Josh Kelly coming through, probably Tim Taranto and others. So I think when you look at the really successful clubs like Hawthorn, Geelong, Sydney, they've had that succession planning there. They've had that depth of leadership. I expect at some stage he'll be captain of the club.
Yeah. His former teammate, Adam Treloar, made some comments about him recently, about his right to explore the market and the lure that there may be for him to leave.
Yeah, I saw his comments. I mean, he sounded a lot more... He's certainly a lot more sure of himself now, Adam, than he was when he was with us. I mean, I think about his final year at the club where he's absolutely adamant he was staying, going nowhere. I think sometimes we've had players, and this happens with the Gold Coast, who go for the money. It ends up being a bit about a go-home factor, but I would have thought in the end his decision, as much as anything, came down to money. I mean... It was very, very clear, Adam, that he was going to stay with us. He was equally clear that Richmond was going to be his club of choice. And then he made a decision to be equally clear that Collingwood was his club of choice. So I think that was a pretty confusing time for him at that stage. But clearly he's got some clarity on it now.
Even managed to wear the new club apparel at a time when he was still playing for the Giants, wasn't he? Or at least attached to the Giants? In a promotional sense, because he was going to be away for the announcement?
Yeah, he was. I mean, I think he underwent an operation. I think that stuff's all, you know, we've talked about it previously. It was an unusual time. It was a very unusual time. I think it's, you know, how we got to Collingwood's probably a podcast in itself.
Are you referring to Graham Allen there?
Well, I think that when you lose your footy manager and a player who is indicating that he wants to stay and then talks about going to Richmond and then ends up at Collingwood with your footy manager, that just, it was an unusual set of circumstances. I hasten to add that I've got a fantastic relationship with Gabby Allen. Huge respect for what he's been able to do. And again, he brought resilience in spades. Yep. To our club, and he brought success to our club. And that was, yeah, just probably a disappointing period in the club's history. You would have loved to have been able to hold Treloar, but in saying that, I don't think we've missed him too much.
Did you raise the manner in which that was done with the highest authorities?
Yeah, I did at the time. Yeah, I just I'm trying to think the sort of discussions we would have had, but it's, you know, once those decisions were made, then we had to just move on quickly anyway. I think it raised a few eyebrows about how it was done. But
you're still harbouring some form of, obviously, regret and ill will about how it unfolded?
Not really. It's more in answer to your question about did you see Adam Treloar's comments about Stephen Cornelio. And I think he's developed himself very, very well, Adam Treloar, and he speaks very clearly, and he loves doing the media. I mean, it's really important to him, the media. I know that was one of his factors when he was in, he was with us, that the limelight was important to him. And I'm really just responding to the fact that, you know, I think the way he characterises how he got there and how he made his decision now is more in hindsight than what it was at the time.
Fair enough. You said before that you feel that it's good for you, the people who you report to, so to speak, your supporters, know where you stand on certain topics. You're very strong on that, Dave. I know that at a recent chief executives gathering at the AFL, which they have at least once a year, sometimes twice, you were quite outspoken on the back of the viewing of the Adam Goods documentary, The Final Quarter. Can I just get you to relay what it is you may have said there, as comfortable as you can be to do that, because I believe you were quite critical of some involvement with AFL around all that whole period, and I'm referring to Eddie Maguire's role in the Adam Goods story.
Yeah, look, I think it was a very good initiative from Gill and the executive to screen that for the CEOs. And there's a lot of people in the room, you know, other AFL executives. And we sat and watched it as you have and others have. And it's quite an awkward documentary to watch in the sense that
it's uncomfortable. It is. Isn't it?
And you know, I know Adam Goods well. I know Michael O'Loughlin particularly well. And those guys, you know, and the work they used to do to help us get the Flying Boomerangs program up. And so, you know, I've got a pretty good connection to those guys in particular. And when you watch that narrative unfold the way it's presented, I think it's a brilliant documentary because it basically, yeah, none of what you see is in dispute. It's just, that's how it played out. And, in discussions then with the CEOs that Gil facilitated about how we all felt about it, I think, yeah, I guess what you're referring to is I just made some points about the fact that certain members of the media we don't have any sort of call on. So what Andrew Bolt chooses to say, what Alan Jones chooses to say, Newman's in character, Sam Newman, so he does what he does. But, you know, I think it was more just a question around what sort of call do we have on officials who contribute at discussion. And, you know, I'd say it if Eddie was sitting here. I think from time to time his dual roles mean that it's he finds himself commenting heavily on other clubs or individuals within the game. And, you know, sometimes it's productive, sometimes it's not.
So again, I don't want to take words out of your mouth, but the way I had it told to me was that you were quite critical of him still being involved in official position at the footy club, having said and done what he did in that whole period?
I don't think I would have said that. What I said was, because again, that would be hypocritical of me to say that he comments on other clubs and therefore I'm going to sit here and comment on him. I think he's obviously done a tremendous job with Collingwood Footy Club, and he's been a real leader in the industry generally. And all I was suggesting at the time was, and it's not personal, it would come across as personal, but just happened to be him in as the case in point. As an office bearer within the game, is there things that we would have or could have done differently? You know, that might have changed some of the narrative early on. I mean, it was the same sort of question I had, I think, in recent weeks when Jeff Kennett said what he said about the security guards at Marvel Stadium. I think, we hold players to account significantly, and include myself in this. It might be that we've got to think about how we hold the administrators at a senior level of the game to account from time to time more than we do.
Do you think more should have been done against Kennett?
It's hard to know exactly what the conversations were that Gillen would have had with him, but it's funny, isn't it? I often think to myself, what if Toby Green had said that?
I think he would have been stood down.
Yeah.
I think he would have been stood down.
Yeah. So
should Jeff have been stood down?
Oh, well, I think there would have to have been that discussion. I mean, I actually spoke up on that one because of, you know, I thought the irony of it was, you know, that, as I said, that there's a club in Hawthorn that's been heavily linked to Stephen Cornelio. Stephen Canelo 3 weeks ago hosted an iftar dinner into Ramadan for 500 people. I mean, he works with new arrivals, migrants, refugees. And, you know, I was just simply saying, I know that if I'd come out with a comment like that, I'd be talking to my board and probably the AFL about whether that, you know, I've done our organisation a disservice because it doesn't reflect the values that we want to present. So that, yeah, I don't sit as judge and jury on chairman of other clubs. I'm simply making the observation, and you know, clearly people within the room at the CEO's conference have spoken to you or others and said, you know, there was some criticism of, and it wasn't necessarily criticism, it was just like, well, there's some office bearers in that film. I mean, I'm interested in your view on it.
Yeah, I agree with you in that. On another podcast I do with Craig Hutchison, we refer to rules for some. I reckon there were rules for Jeff Kennett last week. I agree with you. I think if it was you saying it or someone else at another club, it would have played out a very different way. That doesn't make it right.
I also think we've got to be careful sometimes where, the other part was he doubled down on it and then it comes across as a almost the apology was a request. And then we all move on. I mean,
and even the fact that
Ben Stratton apologised for pinching an Essendon player, but still went to the tribunal.
Mm. Yeah. So again, I'm talking on the run here. Would you have asked him if you were leading the AFL to have stood aside for a few weeks in that regard?
Yeah, I really don't know what I would have done.
Yeah, but something more than what was done.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I think the learning's out of what we're seeing with the Adam Goods situation, and none of us spoke out enough, did we? We all said certain things, but we didn't ultimately change anything. And I think the calling out component at the time rather than post the event is probably a considerable take out of what I saw anyway in those two documentaries.
Well, I think to Eddie's credit, if you read what he said recently, he talks about, you know, what is it that we actually can all learn, and he includes himself in that. And, you know, I noted that he sat through that documentary with his staff and players, and you know, you talk about wearing your heart on your sleeve. I think that's what he's done. He's opened himself up and said, you know, what could I or what can we all learn about it? What I found staggering was, you know, 2 weeks after the industry gets together and puts out a joint statement on a situation like that, we've then got a president talking about new arrivals 2 weeks later. Mm. You know, and our point there too was I put myself in the position of those security staff. You know, yeah. They're trying to find an opportunity and develop themselves, and you know, they're working in gainful employment. And then all of a sudden, you find yourself under pressure going to work.
Yep.
Based on a flippant comment.
Mm. And the apology when it came, Dave, was in a written form on Twitter and at the bottom end of a long email to members. It didn't come. We haven't heard him say it.
Well, that's right. And my view on that or my position on it's informed by a lot of our fans and our staff. We've got a multicultural development unit headed up by a guy called Ali Faraj, who's one of the leading young Muslim leaders in this country, in my view. He's fantastic. And, you know, he was absolutely horrified. So I sit on a board of an organisation called Career Seekers. Career Seekers, their purpose is to try to help qualified or educated migrants or refugees actually find career opportunities in Australia. So I'm not talking just from Matthews as one administrator in the competition having a crack at a president of another club. I actually
you're the coalface.
We're involved in this stuff every day.
Yeah.
And you know, we have to pride ourselves as a club on diversity and inclusion more than any other club. But I think that's what the game prides itself on. So if that's what we all pride ourselves on, then you know, is there a better consequence than just a tweeted apology? I would have thought so.
Yeah, I agree. Israel Folau at the moment with his situation with the Australian Rugby Union, obviously with a contractual component to it, but then the dominant theme around it is the religious component to it. We could talk about this for 3 hours. Have you got a take on that one? Given obviously your club and you personally had Izzy Folau on your books at one stage of an AFL career.
Yeah, look, I think in simple terms, because it is complex, but in simple terms, I support what the ARU's done.
Yep. On the contractual side of it?
Yeah. And I think, you know, any employer, I would have thought, so able to, you know, set expectations yep. with an employee and basically say, well, these are the values we want to adhere to. And, you know, my understanding is they basically said, well, these might be your beliefs, but, you know, did really...
you sign up for us.
You can hold those beliefs, yep. but you shouldn't be public necessarily about things that are so counter to what we're trying to do. When we had him at the Giants, and I saw Kevin Sheedy's quotes, a very respectful, humble young man, and we didn't see, certainly maybe social media 8 years ago, he probably wasn't on Twitter. But, you know, I think it's been a sad situation to watch because he's obviously an outstanding athlete, and I think, you know, it's a sad situation that's getting worse.
Yeah, it's not going away. Removing that part of the Israel Folau story for the moment, do you, just purely from your club taking him out of rugby league when you did, do you regret any part of that?
Not really.
I was as critical as anyone, as you know. And yeah, you yeah. and I had blues over it. But,
no, we did. No, but I've had to go into this role prepared to fail, right? So you can look at that from through the lens of how many games did he play? Was he overpaid?
Not many, and yes.
Yeah, so
in my eyes.
Yeah, so there's different ways you can sort of assess it. I don't regret the fact that we did it. And really it followed on from Carmichael Hunt, who had a little bit of an AFL background, as you know, in private school footy in Queensland. And he was often used, Carmichael Hunt, as an example or a case study of the sort of athletes that our pathway wasn't allowing the game to access. So they were managed by the same company. Carmichael Hunt's interest in an AFL career became Israel Folau's interest. You know, Israel's case really was he sort of came to us. I would have thought, if in hindsight, him coming into the game, he probably would have had a better chance at a bigger, more well-resourced club at the time. So you think about the patience Collingwood's been able to have with Mason Cox, the patience that the Swans had with Ty Canelli, Mike Pike. So, you know, Israel Folau, he's having the same first season as Stephen Keneally. We're training on baseball diamonds. Our facilities aren't complete. He's 21. He's surrounded by 18-year-olds. So he was up against it. But, you know, as I say, we're prepared to try a few things. And, yeah, on many levels that didn't work out.
Yeah. Is that often the key, as you found it, Dave, in all the roles you've had in footy, just being prepared to fail? It's a quality that if you can embrace is one that ultimately works for you over the journey, isn't it? But not everyone's got the luxury of being able to have it. Is that a fair assessment of where you're at and the ability to make significant change?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, the case in point in this week is that a story emerges that we've been having some discussions about the idea of playing a game in California. And, yeah, those sort of things, when you sort of float those ideas, you know, there's any number of people are going to queue up and just
shot down straight away.
Yeah. Yeah. It doesn't worry me in the slightest.
So with that,
a number of those people will probably come to the game if it's scheduled. But I don't really mind that people criticise it.
So with that, you throw that up, and if it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, you move on. Is that the way you approach such projects like that?
Well, you don't want
to,
you know.
You don't harbour it.
We've got scarce resources and limited time. So you certainly, at the same time, you can't be wasting your time on things and just, you know, trying every single thing that that presents itself, because you'd still need to pick and choose. But, no, from a philosophical point of view or an approach, I don't concern myself with criticism as much as vindication.
Yeah. When would, again, I don't want to bog this down too much with this specific chapter, but when would this game in the States be played in an ideal world?
So the fundamental thing that's always held the game back in the US is the presence of cricket grounds, which was why you can play a game in London, which was why it was difficult to get a game up in Shanghai. But, you know, credit to Port Adelaide and the AFL for pursuing that. We've been in discussions in recent weeks with the new leaders of the US cricket governing body, And they're starting a 2020 competition over the next couple of years, and they're building, by the end of next year, they'll have 6 cricket grounds across the US, heavily backed by Indian backers.
Right.
And their plan is that each of those grounds will hold about 15,000 people. So it could be like our games in Canberra or Hawthorn's games in Tasmania. So that presents an opportunity. The concern I think anyone would have had in the past about games where you've got to set up temporary infrastructure is it's so expensive.
The period you referred to before, the end of 2013 when Buddy Franklin chose the Swans, and I'm raising that, Dave, because you did, and you said it's almost was game on between the two clubs. The next year was just as tumultuous, wasn't it, when you guys got Ryan Griffin in and then the whole Tom Boyd thing unfolded. Yeah. They were learning experiences on the run, I'd imagine, even though you were a seasoned administrator by then, but they were pretty heady times, weren't they, both those years?
Yeah, they were. Look, firstly, it incumbent upon us to have a crack at Franklin. Absolutely incumbent upon us. And you see now what he's done for the game in Sydney, not just for the Swans, but for the game generally. I mean, he's on the back of buses. It's a heavy sport and entertainment town, and he's up there amongst the biggest names in sport in Sydney. So it's important. I mean, Kevin Sheedy, I think when we missed out, he moves on quite quickly. He said, look at it this way. He's in Sydney. He's going to sell tickets for you, and you don't have to pay for him. And that's actually
I think he's still dragging at least 6,000 people single-handedly through a Swans game on a Friday night. There's been a game where he played and the game where he didn't play, and there was a big difference in crowd in recent weeks.
And look, what did we offer him? We offered him $7.2 million over 6, and the Swans offered him $10 million over 9, and that's where it's at. I think Liam Pickering and I have probably agree to differ on a couple of aspects of how it all unfolded, but again, he's a young man who gets an opportunity to make a decision on as a free agent. He chose the Swans. The issue for us was how late it all happened, but Gubby Allen, incredibly nimble. I mean, we pinched Mumford off and we got Heath Shaw. I think we spent the money pretty effectively.
Mm.
And then round one came around the next year and, he's playing for the Swans and we had our first win against them, so it was great.
You obviously mentioned Kevin there, Dave, but obviously it's not just the high-profile people around your operation that have helped it get to this very healthy position that it's got to. And one of those people right now is going through a very serious health drama.
Yeah, absolutely. You'd be speaking of Gavin Robertson, who has been with the club from day one. Again, he's a lot like Kevin Sheedy. He's energy and resilience and what he's been able to bring to our club over 8 years has been significant. And he grew up in Western Sydney, played Test cricket, obviously, and played a lot of good cricket for New South Wales. He understands high performance.
No one's ever said a bad word about him anyway, have they?
Never hear it. No. And, I can remember he's... In the very early stages, he's engaged mates of his like Steve Waugh and Simon Kadich and others, and that's how they've become involved with the club as well. But, he's undergoing a significant health challenge at the moment, and, we wish him well because he means a lot to the players and staff.
Yeah. The balancing up of growing the game, Dave, which obviously has been a key component to your role as CEO, with the need as the CEO of a particular club to win a flag, how do you line those two pursuits up? And obviously the drive for premiership is always there regardless, but how do you personally line them up?
Oh, I've got premiership ambitions as point one because I think everything else feeds off that. It's very hard to build a club in a hostile territory or a competitive market when you're the bottom of the ladder. And, our list strategy meant that our first 2 to 3 years were very, very challenging on field. As Gil would say, I think early on could be unwatchable. But we showed a lot of patience, I reckon, and a lot of resilience. And, we put ourselves into contention. And, I know there's always this narrative probably in Melbourne in particular about, have we underachieved? Is the window closed? All those things. I don't buy into that.
Don't you?
No. I just think we've put ourselves in a position to compete. We've made prelim finals. We've continued to push pretty hard. I expect us to push pretty hard again this year and for the years to follow. We've got a very, very talented list and it's continued to mature. And when we've lost players, we lose them for early picks. So we bring in talent.
Yeah.
So we bring in Tim Taranto and these types. So, I'm obsessed with trying to win one because what it would mean for our fans and the ability to sort of move the needle from a fan base point of view would be enormous. And again, it's something you learn from the Swans. The Swans have just, they know that they've got to be front of mind in Sydney. You've got to keep winning.
Yeah.
Winning's important.
Yeah, good way to be. Tasmanian footy, I'll just ask you quickly, have you got a strong view on that?
I'd love to see them in at some stage.
And how would that happen?
Yeah, I don't know, because it just...
We couldn't increase it from 18 clubs, could we?
Not sure. I don't know whether...
Been down that path yourself.
Yeah. Don't know, but I think it'd be terrific. It'd complete the national picture.
Yeah. Yep. West Coast, just too much money to know what to do with?
Unbelievable club. Fantastic club. Across the competition, and probably include Eddie in this and others, but Trevor Nisbet's been terrific support for me personally.
Has
from
he?
Time to time, yep. When you forget that West Coast was a club that started somewhere too. I mean, that's when people say, the Giants and the Suns are artificial clubs, or this, someone had to start somewhere. Mm. Richmond started 150 years ago as a startup. So learning from people like Trevor Nisbet, Brian Cook, others who've been, and also running clubs outside of Melbourne, and how different that is to running a club in Melbourne. Just a big club. I mean, they're the sort of, we talk about them as, what we would aspire to be would be West Coast Eagles in 15 years' time.
Yep. And just as we round off this conversation, Dave, who's been your favourite footballer over the journey when it comes to the Giants' perspective?
Yeah, look, I'd... Unfair to single one out probably because they're all, I'm quite close to a lot of them because a lot of them came through our academy programs. So I've known Stephen Canelo since he's 15 and his family. My son's got his number on his back from the day he was drafted. But, Toby Green. Toby Green's someone I've got enormous respect for. An outstanding person. Misunderstood a lot, particularly in Melbourne. Just a great young lad. Jeremy Cameron. I mean, they're all, we've got a lot of players to like, haven't we?
I reckon you have. Yeah, I think that's the broader appeal to this club that you run from the Melbourne perspective. I think the way they play the game is the key to it. It's a point of difference, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, and you look at the courage of Phil Davis and Callum Ward to leave established clubs that were probably on the cusp of some success, and they come up and they're captaining a brand-new club from age 21. Got a lot of admiration for those guys. We've got some wonderful people in the club and they're very driven to try to win premierships.
Thanks for your time on In the Game.
Pleasure.